Natural Resources to order for Wednesday, May 16th, 2007. Open up a possible reconsideration and work session on Senate Bill 5530. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow a motion to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 5530 was reported out to the full committee. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, motion passes. The chair will accept a motion to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 5530 was reported out to the full committee.
Mr. Chair, I move to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 5530 was reported out to the full committee.
Okay, are there any objections? Hearing no objections, motion passes. The motion carries and the bill is back before the committee. Let's see, Ms. Jordan, would you go through the possible changes that we're going to consider?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The budget is here before the committee to make changes as outlined in the memo that you have in front of you to increase funding for the backlog of facilities by $1,809,189, to increase funding in Package 102 by $300,000, to allow planning and design of Kamwa Chang Center, to provide $200,000 in the grant program for repair, maintenance, and restoration of the Veteran War Memorials, to approve a limited duration position to work with Coastal Field Coordinator planning staff on ocean shore management, habitat conservation for the Western Snowy Plover, and Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, using savings from other fund services and supplies from the operations program at a cost of $129,480, and to approve a limited duration position to coordinate the bicycle recreation programs using savings from other fund services and supplies from the operations program, and the cost for this position is $111,301. Making these changes results in a $1 million decrease in the property acquisition program and a decrease of $1,109,189 in the local grant program to the budget approved previously by the subcommittee. And to accomplish that, the second page shows what the subcommittee action was, what the changes that's required for each of those packages, and then the new total amount in the packages. Mr. Chair, to all other policy packages that were approved by the subcommittee on April 5th remain the same. And then we need to approve a motion to amend Senate Bill 5530 by the amounts indicated in the memo in red. All other the black amounts are remain the same.
Representative Dinkfelter.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I would make a motion to amend Senate Bill 5530 as outlined by Ms. Jordan and as outlined in the memo in front of you in red.
Okay, it's been moved to make a motion to amend 5530 as indicated in the LFO recommendation. Any discussion? Yes.
Question about the increases grant funding and sponsor veterans war memorials on this page, and then over here on the memo it says provides $200,000 in the grant program for repair, maintenance, and restoration. So I guess I'm trying to figure out is it only for repair, maintenance, restoration of existing ones, or does it go into the grant program that can be used for new ones as well?
It's the restoration. It's restoration and repair.
So no new dollars from the war memorials, only to take care of what we've got.
Not at this point. Okay. And realize that $200,000 doesn't go very far.
Okay. I'm not objecting. If we were going to get into new things, and I wanted to see the application deadline moved out a little bit for new people, but if it's existing projects, then that's irrelevant. That's why I asked the question.
I might state for the record that, as indicated here in the memo, the governor had expressed concern about the budget. The co-chairs authorized me to meet with State Parks and the governor's representative. We negotiated these changes. Some of these changes are actually putting money back in the places where some members of the committee had concerns that money were being decreased. And we actually were able to do a number of other items while still maintaining some of the original intent, to improve local grants significantly and actually to improve acquisitions also. So I think in a sense it was a win-win negotiation. So, yes.
One more comment that I wanted to, I can't remember if I got it on the record of only in private office meetings, but there's a situation that exists in these war memorials where, or not necessarily war memorials exactly, but some memorial features that are attached to facilities, veterans facilities, the VA care facilities, and sometimes there's a memorial attached to it. And I want to continue to work on making sure that the ones that are located in Vancouver, Washington, which is where Oregonians who are in end-of-life sort of situations go, because there is nothing in Oregon, that they not be precluded from being eligible for something like this. And the way the agency's rules, it's sort of unclear whether or not they can go. But I have constituents from my district who died in that facility, and they are ineligible, at least if you look at the face of the rules, to have a memorial to them there, even though that's the only option for him to go, because there is nothing in Oregon. So that's something that I'm interested in, making sure we don't preclude a facility where it's the only option for an Oregonian to go to.
Okay. Yes, Representative Burley.
Thank you. 101 acquisitions, the $15 million and change that subcommittee acted upon earlier. If I'm not mistaken, the original request for that was, what, $3 million or $4 million? Three and a half?
Additional.
Is there anything that would prohibit us from taking those lottery funds and putting them into 802 instead?
Into 802?
Yes, the facility investment for backlogs.
No, there's nothing preventing us from doing that in one essence, but I can tell you that the whole discussion around this budget has been over improving local grants and acquisitions.
I'm not quite sure I understand.
If you put if you were to move the money into that line item, you would actually then be putting more into that line item than they had even requested originally in the governor's recommendation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, the property acquisitions is a priority of the co-chairs for this budget.
Well, that's all well and good. I mean, I spent 5 years on the board for the Parks District in Bend, and we had this very same issue the whole time. You know, how much land do you acquire versus what do you do about maintaining what you've already got? And it just seems to me that we're looking at $6 million for backlog, and we're, you know, going to give it 1.8, and they only wanted 3.5 for acquisition, and we're giving them 15.6, or actually now 14.6. And it just seems to me like that's very unbalanced. And then my last comment is 105, the bicycle program. I've always been, I think, pretty clear about this. As much as I support bicycling and bicycle tourism, I think that as long as the department still has an imbalance in its budget with respect to the fairgrounds, that I don't think we should be starting up any new programs or funding even limited duration positions, as is the case with 105.
Your objections are noted. I would state that one of the things that we get into in these numbers is you're looking at the POPs, not the full amount. This would basically, I think it's indicated here, bring up the backlog facilities up to $13 million in total in terms of addressing the backlog. We have a motion on the floor to approve the LFO recommendation. I understand Representative Burley's comments as an objection. Is that a fair understanding?
It is.
Are there any other objections? Hearing none, motion passes. We still have an additional budget note.
Yes, Mr. Chair. A budget note is recommended, and I'm just going to read it for the record. If the Department of Administrative Services determines based on the estimate of revenue scheduled to be released by the department in December 2007 as required by the statute, that the total amount of lottery fund revenues estimated to be available for the biennium beginning July 1, 2007 is more than the total amount of lottery fund revenues estimated to be available for the biennium beginning July 1, 2007 in the end of session estimate, that it is reported to the appropriate interim committee. Parks and Recreation may request in equal amounts an increase in expenditure limitations to address backlog of facilities, park development, and land acquisitions from the legislature during the proposed special session of the legislature or the emergency board.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve the budget note?
And Mr. Chair, I will move, make a motion to approve the budget note as provided by the fellow analyst.
Any discussion? I might note that we probably will be, when we do come back in February, may be making further adjustments. My understanding is, I believe the total Measure 66 funds, we're up about $10 or $11 million now. Is that about?
Yeah.
About $10 or $11 million.
Is that the total what funds?
Measure 66 funds, split between OWEB and state parks. Just in this forecast. Okay. Any objections to the motion on the budget note? Seeing none, motion passes. Final motion?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 5530 to the full committee on Ways and Means of the Duke House as amended recommendation.
Okay. It's been moved to move Senate Bill 5530 to the full committee with the Duke House recommendation. Are there any objections? Representative Burley?
Yes, noted.
Okay. With that, motion passes. I will carry to the full and to the Senate. Representative Dinkelter, will you carry to the House?
Hello.
Thank you very much. And now, Mr. Moore, will you come forward? And I may be able to get the committee out of here by 9:20. Now I'll close the work session on 5530, open a public hearing on
5530.
Yeah, we're going to get those
virtual smoke and more. As I understand it, is
yes. Mr. Chairman, thank you. Today we'll try to finish up our presentation as quickly as possible for you. We're down to the administrative program, and I will turn it over to Deputy Director Byerly.
Good morning, Chair Debo, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lori Byerly. I'm the Deputy Director for Administration for the department. If you could please turn to tab under administration in your book, page 147, I will briefly and quickly talk about what goes on the administrative side of the budget agency. As you can see in the org chart on page 147, we've talked already about the stuff on the left side of the page, the programs, wildlife division, fish division, the activities and the budget issues associated with those pieces of the budget. To the right, on the shaded part, are the programs that fall under the administrative side of the program. Under administration, we've got human resources, information education, information systems, and then administrative services, which is primarily fiscal activities of the department. You want to turn to the next page. I'm not going to go through this in great detail, but it talks in the next couple pages kind of about the activities in each of those program areas. Within administration, of course, is the director's office. We've got six staff in the director's office, as well as the associated budget for the commissioners. We've got seven commissioners. The commission meets once a month throughout the biennium. We provide staff support and associated expenditures for those commission meetings within the administrative program. We also have the Human Resources Division within administration. That's our employment services, as well as our recruitment activities, employment relations, working with employees across the state, affirmative action, classification, recruitment selection, as well as safety and health. We have a lot of people in the field working with equipment in a lot of different environments. It requires a lot of focus and effort in the safety arena in particular. Information Education Division is a little bit kind of a different piece of our administration program. It's tied very closely to the wildlife and fish programs. We work with the programs to provide both information externally via our media contacts. We do a lot of information to the public via press releases. For example, if you were to look at the information we've provided to the media in May, you'd see a variety of topics from melamine and fish food to a changing salmon fishing regulations to information about free fishing days or youth fishing programs. There's a lot of information the department needs to get out to the public for participation in our programs and the events around the state. That's kind of the information side of the program. The education side of the program focuses on things like hunter safety, hunter education. We do some aquatic and angling education. We also work with adults, too. The Becoming an Outdoors Woman program was something that was mentioned in some of the public testimony yesterday. That's a very popular program where we provide sessions and training for women in the outdoors, learning how to fish, hunt, skin. Well, maybe not skinning, but a variety of outdoor activities. So that's kind of the information education side of the program. Information Systems Division programs. This provides our IT, our information technology support to the agency. As we've talked about before, we're a very broad-based agency as far as our geographical footprint across the state. We've got a lot of field offices. Some are very tiny. We've got single people stationed in different places across the state. And we've, over the last 2 years, we've made a really focused effort to try and get those people connected electronically so we can share information more effectively via email and electronic communications. That's required a lot of focus on getting those people hooked up to the internet so they can communicate with their coworkers around the state, and we've successfully managed to get most of those people hooked up and in the loop now. That's been a big focus of what's been going on in the ISD area. The other thing that has been taking a lot of effort, both in our IT arena as well as on the program side, is we're currently working on replacing our existing point-of-sale system. The point-of-sale system, or POS system, is the system through which we sell licenses and permits and tags to the public. It's the system that folks come into contact with when they go to G.I. Joe's and buy a fishing or hunting license. Right now, through the current system, we provide services to about 500 vendors across the state, mostly in those stores, G.I. Joe's, Walmart, Bi-Mart, Fred Meyer. Folks can go in whenever those stores are open and purchase a license during those retail hours. We also provide point-of-sale or license services at some of our field offices as well. So you can go, for example, here in Salem, you can come to the office on Cherry Street and buy your fishing and hunting license there. The current system has been up since 1994. The department has been handling the current system within our own workforce and structure since 1998. The system is pretty much on its last legs as far as being able to be expanded or modified or really having any adjustments made to it. The equipment is quickly fading. We've pretty much used all the replacement parts we've had available to replace vendor systems as they've gone out or have had trouble. So the new system is going to provide us a way to be able to possibly expand our work with vendors as far as the number of vendors in the system. The new technology is touchscreen. It's more user-friendly. I don't know if any of you have gone and purchased a license at a vendor, but you may have encountered, as I have, that depending on how familiar the person behind the counter is with the system, sometimes that current system can be somewhat challenging to get a license or permit through. So I think the new system is going to provide some assistance with customer service for both the vendor and the customers coming into the office. Under the new system, we're going to have a little bit different funding mechanism. We have a vendor that will be providing us the service and all the equipment, so we're no longer going to be responsible for that hardware internally. The way that we're paying for that is for each transaction handled through the system, that vendor's going to get 72 cents on the transaction. That's the mechanism we're using to support the system. Since we have not brought the new system up, we have not paid the vendor any money yet. That paying that vendor is contingent on us having a system up and running and processing those transactions. The name of the vendor is Outdoor Central. It's an organization that's worked with several states, especially western states, on putting up these licensing systems, specifically in the area of fish and wildlife licensing. Initially, we thought this system would be up early this year, but due to efforts with the vendor and some issues with just getting the project done, I think our initial timelines may have been a little overly ambitious. We've postponed that and don't plan on bringing the system up until sometime this summer. Actually, this week, we've got staff back in Nashville where Outdoor Central is located, fine-tuning some of those final steps as far as getting the IPAWS, which is the terminal system, up. The new system is going to have some additional components we don't have on the current system. We'll have the replacement terminals for those vendors. We're also going to have an IVR system through which hunters will do some mandatory reporting, which is going to be part of that system. And it's also going to have the capability to sell licenses and permits via the Internet, which is something our new system couldn't even entertain, or our current system can't even entertain as far as its structure and hardware and software. So we're looking forward to bringing that system up, and we're looking forward to providing better customer service and hopefully expanded customer service to our licensees. We have been very sensitive about the timing of when we implement that system because of our deadlines for things like control 10 applications. For example, right now is a very busy time. Yesterday was the deadline to put in for a control 10 application if you want to go hunting this fall in one of the control 10 units. So we're very busy working with those folks to get them in the system so we can be prepared to do those draws in June. So we're looking forward to that. That's something that's taken a lot of effort and focus on the part of the department. We also will be looking, as once we have that system in place, we're going to be revisiting our IT infrastructure to see, with the change in the system and the vendor, how that fits with the new model. There may be some opportunities internally, since we're no longer doing all the programming for the system, to be able to redeploy some resources and work on some other efforts. So that's going to be part of what we're looking at once we get the new system up and running. Anyway, so that's the big focus in the IT arena. I'd like to move on to administrative services. You had a question?
We have a question from Representative Gerard, and I believe Paul may still have some clarification needed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned new mandatory reporting requirements for hunters. Could you elaborate?
Chair Devlin, Representative Gerard, I'm not the expert on this, so I may fail here. But I believe we're working toward a mandatory, and actually here comes Mr. Anglin to rescue me.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. Over the course of the last 5-6 years, we have heard repeatedly from hunters around the state at our public meetings, at our mule deer planning meetings, our elk planning meetings, that they don't like our current reporting system of where we call hunters up to determine how successful they were during the season, and that they have been encouraging us for quite some time to move to a mandatory reporting system where, similar to what Washington has, Idaho does it through postcards, where hunters would be required after they are through hunting for the year to submit their information to the agency. And we've entertained that idea for quite some time now. We haven't done it because our old point-of-sale system wasn't set up to handle it. We've run it through a bunch of public meetings around the state, which obviously don't reach all hunters. But it is something that we have received a lot of support from, and that we've been encouraged very strongly by the hunters of Oregon to implement. And we'll be moving forward with that over the course of the next couple of years.
Yeah. Caught my interest there. Somebody wanted to talk to me in the hall. He caught my interest.
And so notice he did not say he did not say caliber of weapons, serial numbers, yeah, and leave a thumbprint.
That was where the amplitude was.
So I guess my question is, how do we envision working? Is it something where when I go to get my next year's tag, they'll ask me a series of questions, and it'll be programmed right into the point-of-sale computer, and I'll answer them? Or am I going to have to get on the Internet and go to some website?
Chair Devlin, Representative Clem, the point of sale system itself will not be set up, and the vendors will not be set up to help you through the response on the mandatory reporting. It'll be something that you can either call in on, or that you can go onto the Internet from home and fill out the survey and do it at your leisure. The point of sale system will be linked to the database that will maintain the survey and the responses, so that like in Washington, if I go in to buy my license tomorrow and I have not completed the survey yet, the point of sale system will block me from buying my license until I go over to the phone, mm-hmm, make a phone call, and get into the system. There's a little bit of a delay, and then the point of sale flag is lifted, the block is lifted, and I can purchase my license.
And people said they want this? I mean, to be honest, the current system, if I've got it right, is we do random certain amount of phone calls to people to ask them how they did this year.
Chair Devlin, Representative Clem, that's correct. We do, current system is We have a statistical survey, statistically designed survey, and we do random phone calls to people. It's a very expensive system. From the hunter's perspective, it doesn't sample a very large group of people, but it has been very consistent around the state over the course of the last 5-6 years that we have heard from hunters, we want you to go to a mandatory reporting system.
That blocks you when you go to get your tag, potentially. I'm going to do my own little survey, too, if you don't mind.
Sure.
With OHA and some of the hunters I know. It seems counterintuitive, but maybe not. You've been at the public hearings. I haven't. So.
Just a quick comment. I have to agree with Representative Clavick. You know, hunting's declining. The issuance of licenses are declining. So you're going to make one more step more difficult to get a license. That just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Mr. Chair, if I may, real quick. We're going to continue to look at this. We'll continue to have to operate both systems for a while because we've got to track the numbers to make sure they're the same. You're going to have mandatory report. And at some point in time, to make mandatory reports work, you have to have the ability to block people's access to those hunting permits to get the compliance necessary to have a successful permit. Idaho went to this, and it was driven by the hunters, not by the staff. And the primary reason was they didn't believe the random statistical surveys were accurate, and they thought that based on what they were seeing in the field, they knew more than what was being shown by the randomized surveys. And the only way the commission could see to get at the credibility that hunting community wanted was to go to mandatory reports. And they do work, but the only way they will work is if you have some enforcement of it that requires a fairly high compliance of people reporting that in. And we're just starting this based under commission direction, and we'll be reporting back to you on it.
Just out of curiosity, when they didn't trust the data that you were getting from hunters, was it on what side was it? Was it like if you ask an avid fisherman how well he did? Or
Mr. Chairman, it was predominantly hunting. Wasn't about the fishing lies as much. Yeah. And we use random surveys for the fish work too. But the bottom line is. They just didn't believe those randomized surveys with those statistical confidence in there, even though we can show that the numbers come out the same. And that demand and that pressure on the commission was large enough that there was a shift to this mandatory report. Nevada has had it for years, very successfully, but Nevada is also an all-controlled hunt state by and large.
And they have no animals. It's just a lot of saying.
What I do believe is that I've heard this a million times, that they don't believe the population forecasts are accurate, and therefore not enough tags are issued, and there's plenty of deer out there if you just issue more tags for Eastern Oregon, and so maybe that's where they're saying the statistical samples are saying there's way more killed than were really killed, therefore there's really a lot more out there, therefore issue more tags. You know, so I could buy that. I've heard that a lot. And if the way you get to real answers, I don't know, if we're convinced, though, that it's going to come back with the exact same population forecast, and so therefore no more tags are going to be issued, it's just a lot more effort to have to prove the exact same result. These guys may not know what they're asking for.
Mr. Chair,
yeah.
I'm sorry that I stepped out of the room, and I don't want to impose on your testimony doing this all over again. This just happened to be an issue that has been very important to me. Finding the answer. So did you already go through testimony on what your process was in getting the accurate information? I'll get it from somebody. If you haven't done that, I'd be very interested in what process you use internally to figure out how many deer or how many elk there are in certain parts of the state.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Avakian, we were not discussing our population survey systems. We were talking about how to determine harvest from a mandatory report versus a telephone randomized survey of hunters. But the comment came relative to that coupled with the statistical sampling we do for population work, and some concerns by our hunting public of whether or not we have both accurate harvest information and accurate population information to project for the commission to make decisions on tag and harvest allocations.
So those are two different analyses
yes.
that your agency does.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Avakian, we would be glad to sit down with you and go over how we do the survey work for deer and elk and other big game animals.
I'll give you a call if I think I need to have that.
Thank you. Invite me. I could settle a lot of bar arguments if I had the answer to that question.
Maybe.
or start a few fights. I'm not sure which.
Mr. Siebert, did you want to reply?
I just had one question, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Lori testified that 72 cents per transaction is what you'll be paying Central Point to operate the system. If I remember correctly, under the current process, you charge $1.50 surcharge when you buy a license. 75% stays with the vendor. 75% goes to the department. 75 cents. 75 cents goes to the department, and 75 cents stays with the vendor. And so you're saying that you're going to pay of the 75 cents you retain, 72 to Central Point, but that 75% supports your program now. And you're not proposing any changes in your program and how it's operated or funded, at least at this point in this budget. So how do you fund that 72 cents that you're going to be sending off to Central Point?
Chair Devlin, Mr. Siebert, and members of the committee. And right now, the 72 cents is per transaction, which right. we currently don't get $1.50 on every transaction in the current system. So it's a little bit, it's a different funding mechanism. Okay. We recognize that there may be a gap between, you know, what we're... The expectation is not that the new system is going to be less expensive than what we're currently doing. The expectation is that we're going to have a better system, and that by shifting the burden of programming and equipment to the vendor, we're going to have fewer headaches in that arena. Part of our analysis, as once the system's up and running, is when we'll factor in, you know, the transactions we're paying vendors. We also have to address the idea of internet sales and what that workload's going to be like. We'll factor that in with our current staffing levels, how we're supporting the system. We continue to provide Tier 1 support under the new system, which is when someone has a problem with the system, they get us before they would end up talking to somebody at Outdoor Central, or we're still the first contact in that line. We're still providing that level of support. So we're going to have to weigh, you know, continuing costs. Right now, I think annually we get about, off that 75 cents per license, I think we get about a little over $1.5 million of biennium that goes back into the program to support licensed staff as well as IT staff that work on the system. So we'll continue to have, should have those dollars still coming in, but we're also going to be paying additional money to the vendor. So, you know, we're going to have to evaluate how that cost-benefit works out. I don't have a cost benefit with those specific items that was done as part of the planning for the new system. I believe the focus was we have a system that needs to be replaced. The new one's not going to last forever. And what's the best way to go about doing that? And the decision was made to go with an external vendor as opposed to try to go back to an in-house system that we completely manage ourselves.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Siebert, I'm aware of that situation, and I'm looking closely at it. Until we get the new system up and operating fully, I'm not willing to make any staff adjustments. Currently, it's my belief, based on my discussions with Lori and the IT staff, that we are using more of our IT staff now to support that system than it's paying for, with that 72 cents, with all of our other costs rolled in. The system's old. We've got one room about this size that's full of nothing but old printers, and one person that almost full-time rebuilds those printers to keep them going. I hope to get and capture some of those staff back for primary duties elsewhere, but it'll take us a while to transition, but hopefully by the next biennium or halfway through this biennium, we'll have a better understanding of what our staff responsibilities will be to support that system, and we will address that.
Please proceed.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, just one other comment on the IDR is, aside from the reporting issue we discussed, it will give us flexibility to continue to adapt survey tools as we move forward. We'll have a much more flexible system. If we decide we want to try and survey for a particular topic or item, we'll be able to implement that quite quickly as opposed to the current system, which we have to do it basically through a manual process. On page 151 of the notebook is a brief highlights of what is in the administrative service division side of the program. This is primarily our fiscal services. We've got a budget section, a fiscal service or accounting section, the licensing and controlled hunt section. This is the group of folks that work directly with the vendors and with customers on the use of that POS system and making sure that we get the licenses and permits to the public. We also have a procurement section that works with contracts and purchasing. We have a business operations section that coordinates motor pool and statewide risk management issues for the agency. And then we have a payroll section. So that's basically our core administrative service section division responsibilities. On page 153, you'll see a pie chart that kind of shows within administration how activities are divvied up. You'll see director's office is a pretty small percentage of the budget, as well as human resources. Information education is about 11% of the budget. Our ISD section, including that support for the point of sale system, is about 22% of the budget. And the remainder of the budget within the administrative services side of the program is that admin fiscal area of activity. That's about 56% of the budget. Staffing wise, within administrative services, we've got about 114 positions providing these services to the department. On page, you want to skip to page 155. I just want to point out, if you look at essential package 021-022, there is a cost element associated with the point of sale system. When we came before the emergency board back in January of 2006 to begin working on the implementation of the new system, we received some limitation to start bringing the system up. There's a phasing component to continue to finish bringing the system up and make those payments to the vendors. You're going to see that in package 021-022. It's a phase-in of $1.37 million to complete that implementation and bring those expenditures up to the expected level. On page 156 is a package related to our deferred maintenance master plan. I believe when Mr. Bowles was here talking about fish division, we also talked about our deferred maintenance package. This is the debt service component of that package. The governor's recommended budget anticipates $1.5 million in certificates of participation being sold to support deferred maintenance projects. This is the debt service and other COP cost component of that COP sale. This package would support the debt on that on those bonds or certificates with just over $200,000 in general fund. So that's what's in policy package 100. It's tied directly to our deferred maintenance plan and package itself. On page 158, policy package 140 relates to commercial fisheries management. And we talked about the need for or the changes in the crab pot limits we made this last year, the commission made some additional enforcement and as well as licensing efforts are involved with that. This provides a support person in the licensing arena to provide additional support related to those crab pot limits and additional permitting activities related to the commercial crabbing program. That is all. Those are all the packages within the administrative services program. Now, we talked just real quickly on capital improvements. We talked about this already the other day when we talked about fish division, but just real briefly, the $1.5 million I mentioned earlier would go to support a variety of projects that were prioritized under our deferred maintenance master plan. If you want to look on page 164, there's a brief description of the types of activity that's in that package. We have some real small projects and some real big projects, everything from replacing concrete raceways at fish hatcheries to just putting up a new wall here or there. We've got a lot of facilities around the state that need a lot of help to bring up to at least some core safety and health standards, as well as and making some changes that will provide additional efficiencies and some infrastructure that will last into the future. So that's pretty much concludes our testimony on the budget. We hit the programs. We covered administration. Go ahead.
Any additional questions? Yes, Representative.
On page 161, under the description of deferred maintenance, a couple things, and I'm assuming you have a capital plan that looks at buildings that you're going to retire or properties that you're going to sell off and such, and And one, I'd just be curious about that and looking in the future, you know, because this is, it's a lot of buildings. I don't know how you guys manage so many facilities. But I had a question about, also, it says ODF&W on the second line owns and operates land improvements valued at $24.2 million. What are land improvements? I mean, is that an improvement on a capital building that you still have debt service on?
Chair Devlin, Representative Diegfelder, we don't, we're not paying any, currently paying any debt on any buildings. Everything we have, we own. So it's just, we're talking about improvements to the land other than structures, potentially. So we've got facilities where we have more than just buildings. We've got, you know, hatchery raceways. We've got roads. We've got some restroom facilities for visitors. We've got a variety of things besides just pure structures that we're considering to be improvements on those properties.
So that includes all of, and then you list some also down below. I hadn't seen that term. I mean, facilities improvement would make sense, but I just wasn't sure if that meant on the ground habitat improvement projects or.
Senator Devlin representing, although it's specific to the improvements we've made, you know, on the structural arena as opposed to habitat. I think that we're trying to make a distinction here between that it's more than just buildings, it's more than just structures, which is why it goes on to talk about roads, tunnels, bridges, different elements besides just a building that's on a piece of property. The term does seem a little peculiar.
Yep. Senator Devlin, Representative, if you look down on the next to last sentence in there, it continues and says that they're valued at 24.7 and include all of those things such as bridges, tunnels, fences, dams on ponds, you name it. Anything that requires maintenance and management over time has a value associated with it.
So the maintenance master plan, though, it identifies all of the deferred maintenance plans, and then how often is that updated?
Chair Devlin, Representative Dinkelder, the maintenance master plan that we're referring to in this document is one that was done by an outside contractor, and that was the first time it was completed. We have not had an update to that plan since it was completed 2 years ago. It's something we'll look at again. Right now, the amount of work laid out in that plan for us is more than we can chew on in the near future. I do believe we'll be, you know, revisiting kind of back to the original part of your statement, what, you know, as far as what we have statewide, those facilities, are there opportunities to, you know, make some changes as far as what we actually own or consolidate, or as we move into the future, not just looking at what we can fix, but what maybe we can strategically change to help us move into the future as part of our plan. But we do not have a contract or a specific process to update that plan in a certain time frame.
One area, consolidation might change what these figures are, but do you have from your study that was done 2 years ago, a overall estimate of deferred maintenance in terms of from a dollar standpoint?
It says here, $9.15 million. Yes, that's right. Senator Devlin, it's on the bottom of page 61.
Chair Devlin, Representative Dinkfelder, the 9.14 were the high priority projects. There was more than that. There's more than that out there.
Low for all,
yes, that was what we isolated in the high priority health and safety issues piece of the program.
Well, any closing remarks, Mr. Moore?
Senator Devlin, no. We appreciate the patience of the committee in going through this budget, and we stand ready to answer any questions now or later.
Thank you very much. Mr. Siebert, do we have an idea when we may be able to bring this back to committee?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, right now getting DEQ ready and starting on OWEB, so I think it'll be a little while before you see this budget.
Okay, a couple weeks then, probably. Okay, with that, I'll close the public hearing. Tomorrow we will have the DEQ budget. It will be a work session only. And so please be here at 8:30.
And is that it for tomorrow?
That's it for tomorrow. And with that, we'll adjourn.
Still ready?